The Mutants Are Here, a brand new Deadpool and Wolverine trailer. The X-Men 97 series has gone cosmic, and our mutant marathon continues with X-Men 3, The Last Stand. Everything you need to know about the universes you love and more after the jump.
Truth is, I'm a Jedi.
I'm the Vengeance.
And I am...
Welcome in to Season 3, Episode 16, the Joe Montana episode of the Direct Podcast. Let me know your number 16 athletes out there. I'm not sure there are too many more than old Joe Montana. I am joined today by not Matt Rimke. Matt will be here for the X-Men 97 review and our Mutant Marathon, but I am joined by our Canadian correspondent, my co-senior editor at thedirect.com, the Klein Felt. Klein, what's up, man?
I'm doing well. Not a lot. It's been a very busy day so far. We wake up, weekend's over, and it's like, bam, welcome. Welcome to the new week. We got a whole lot to talk about.
I love it, dude. It's amazing. Woke up to Tom Holland talking about Spider-Man, you know, got the coffee ready, and all of a sudden there's a Deadpool trailer out. I'm like, this is amazing. Quick question. How much NBA basketball did you watch this weekend?
I watched at least a quarter of every one of the games. I think I watched six full games, and then a quarter of the other two. So a lot.
Yeah. It's funny. Me too. I'm trying to think which game I watched in its entirety. I think it might've actually been the Lakers Nuggets game Saturday night that I watched like start to finish with no distractions. I went and watched the new Henry Cavill movie during the Heat game, because I'm like, I don't want to watch the Heat game anymore.
The ungentlemanly,
the Ministry of
Warfare.
It's a terrible name. I mean, it's in the movie, like it kind of makes sense. It's even like one of those moments where like they say it exactly. I digress, but it's the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, and it kind of makes sense. It was more, I really didn't know what to expect going in. It was more historically based than I thought. Like, I didn't realize it was this whole like covert like off the books, like they literally say at the beginning of the movie that this story comes from like declassified files, or I guess they would be confidential files that were declassified in 2016 from Winston Churchill, and like kind of what this little group was and what they did. It was pretty good. It only made $9 million opening weekend, so that's not great. I mean,
still no Canadian release date. That's so weird to me. Usually, usually they coincide with the U.S. release here, and they just get lumped into the North American box office. But for some reason, still no release date up here.
Can't I didn't know
if
that.
I wanted to. I know.
Yeah. Alan Rickman, I think that's how you say his last name. He's really good. The guy from Reacher. Wants to be Batman. He's really good in the movie. He is absolutely jacked out of his mind, and he just like is super proficient with like a bow and arrow. It's a lot of fun. But and Henry Cavill is like totally different. He's like very comedic. He's the leader, of course, but very different role for him. But yeah, NBA wise, couldn't watch the Heat. Can't stand that matchup. Just don't. It's kind of torture. It's like this Heat game, this Heat team kind of sucks.
What do you mean? That's a matchup you've owned for the last like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, but now we have no one, and Bam's trying his best, and the Celtics are just too damn good. That team's going to win the finals. I mean, I don't see anyone stopping them. But yeah, I mean, overall, I would say for NBA, like there was a lot of boring games. Like last night, there was a pretty good game, finally, but like a ton of blowouts, some surprising blowouts, like LA and the Mavs. That was pretty shocking to me. Anyway, so today at the end of the episode, we have our Mutant Marathon. We're already 3 weeks in. The Last Stand is here. What a movie. Can't wait to dive into that one next week. So here is a very important production note, or, you know, Mutant Marathon note for those listening. We are not doing First Class next week. Or not. No, sorry. That's a few weeks from now. Next week makes sense. Hold on to that thought. Next week makes sense. This is 2009 X-Men Origins Wolverine. For a future note, though, just kind of putting this a couple weeks ahead of time, we're going Origins Wolverine. And if anyone has a schedule out there, you'll notice we are doing the Wolverine in 2 weeks, not First Class. So we are switching those two. So if you're getting ahead of schedule, those listening out there, just be mindful. We are doing Origins Wolverine next week. fantastic movie. Just telling you right now, X-Men Origins Wolverine. And then we're diving into The Wolverine before doing First Class. That's kind of the order we wanted to do. Hit both of those Wolverine movies back to back to kind of give us a little bit of a different perspective. Also, please subscribe to the Direct Extras YouTube page. We've got interviews on there, exclusive interviews, and video clips from this podcast. But until then, let's dive into the news.
Spider-Man wasn't attacking the city. He was trying to save it. That's slander.
It is not. I resent that. Slander is spoken. In print, it's libel.
They did it. Marvel Studios is officially back, in my mind. A red band trailer, R-rated, F-bombs galore, Deadpool and Wolverine official trailer is here. I am so excited about this movie. This trailer did so much for me. In a way, this was the Wolverine side of the Deadpool and Wolverine kind of trailer, if you want to kind of say it that way, because the Super Bowl trailer was very much so the Deadpool 3 trailer, where it's like, all right, Deadpool's back. He's joining the MCU. This trailer was Deadpool's here. We got that. Here's also the Wolverine. So we learn about this new Wolverine. He's from a different dimension, a different universe. Klein, what was your biggest takeaway from this new trailer?
I mean, for me, it's honestly, this is the trailer that won me over for the movie. I don't want to say I was a skeptic coming into it, but I was not necessarily on the hype train as much as some other people may have been. I was a little worried. We've been promised cameos the movie before, and I was worried we were going to, this would, I don't want to invoke its name, but we were heading down a multiverse of madness path, and I was worried about that.
Yeah.
This trailer cemented it for me that it is going to be more than that. The biggest takeaway for me coming out of the trailer was that I think the thing that Deadpool has always needed, on screen at least, is this like straight man. Like Wolverine is going to, this isn't a silly Wolverine. This isn't a funny Wolverine. He is just in a funny movie with a incredibly hilarious main character. And just the two of them playing off each other is so good. I think like the moment for me is when they're in the bar right at the beginning and Deadpool has the gun pointed at him. And he's like, he says, unless you want to be breathing through your fucking forehead, I'd reconsider. And he just leans onto the gun and it's just like, oh, like this is a
leans and smiles.
Like this is a, I am done Wolverine. I am over it. I have like, it's almost like a Wolverine that we saw in Logan a little bit, like this kind of like fed up. I've had too much of this shit Wolverine. And he's getting roped back into the superhero antics of it all.
Yeah. You know what it reminded me of? So I agree. I love how it's this alternate universe Wolverine. It's going to be a new, I mean, it's Hugh Jackman, but
do you
in
love
this,
that?
I do.
Because that, I'm a little trepidatious about that. I wanted this to be Wolverine. Like I wanted this to be the Fox universe Wolverine.
Well, I think the Fox universe Wolverine, we had its arc with Logan, you know, and I think not touching Logan really helps me. Like if it was before, if this was like, you know, him pulled out before Logan, I guess you could have like worked around that. I like this idea because one of the most exciting parts to me of this trailer is now getting to know this new Wolverine's backstory. And look, it's in this situation, it's like we already know Hugh Jackman's take on Wolverine, and it's going to be very similar to that. We're already so familiar. I think it's perfectly fine if we just give this guy a new background. I mean, his suit's totally different, right? Like he has the actual X-Men comic book superhero suit. So I'm totally in. Like I actually, like I said, I am now so invested into what this, because emotionally, I think it would be hard to really get much impact from the Logan Wolverine than we could with this new backstory like we saw for a second, which I love that line, by the way, when Wade Wilson's like, or should we wait until the third act to learn about your fucking like sob story or whatever?
The third act flashback.
Yeah, third act flashback, which I can't wait to see that, you know, part, because I could see Sean Levy, like the director here, being like, let's use a moment of levity of, you know, Deadpool saying that and then actually cut to it. And it is this like what that scene that we saw where it seems like he's, I don't know what happens, you know, but he's just devastated and he, the whole bit of this story, of this trailer, is that he is a Wolverine that let his world down. He let his world die, essentially, but not actually. What it reminded me of, and I love what you said earlier, how it kind of was like the Wolverine that we saw at the beginning of Logan. It's like that to me, with a mix of 5 years ago or 5 years past, Chris Evans, Captain America, where we're in Avengers Endgame. The blip happens because it seems honestly like that universe there at the very beginning of Wolverine at the bar and him being like, you're not welcome here. That feels very post blip era universe. Now, it may not be a blip. It may not be that exact event, but it feels that same way. Like the heroes let everyone down. You know, the Earth is ruined. Some major cataclysmic thing happened where the X-Men or the Avengers didn't stop it. So that gets me very excited because now we get to dive into a new universe. It may be just his perspective on it, but you know they're going to throw us something, some crazy event, like similar to, and I think honestly that is a very good talking point, but also like worry, is Multiverse of Madness. Where in Multiverse of Madness, we get to see Earth 838. And we learn all about this Illuminati team and how they were able to defeat Thanos, but obviously they had to then kill Doctor Strange because he was, you know, taking them down this dark path. I think they could do something similar with this movie, but do it in a better way, in a more impactful way. Because what's happening here is that we're pulling out this Wolverine, you know, this version of Wolverine, and he's already let his Earth down, and it seems to be like this is a revenge tour, or maybe he can now save his Earth. Like I'm so fascinated. This trailer in general,
do for Wade what he couldn't do for himself.
Yeah,
it's kind of the vibe that I'm getting. Like they did a great job of grounding this multiversal story in this trailer, where the first trailer it's kind of like, oh, Deadpool, the TVA shows up, what's going on? And now it's like, oh, I understand why he would want to find Wolverine, why he would want, if he knows his world is going to end,
yeah,
who is he going to call? He's going to call, as he says, the X-Man. Like, he's going to go to the person,
yeah,
and find one. And this is obviously one who couldn't do what he wanted to do. And so this can be a chance of redemption for that character. And like, that's the character we're going to get for this Wolverine. And then hopefully they can save Deadpool's crew and family and his world, because it seems like something is coming for that.
Well, that seems like, to me, you know, with the whole 20th Century Fox thing in the background, it seems like that's just the Fox universe is dying or something like that. You know, I think that is going to be like sillily explained by the TVA that universe is basically dying, you know. And what it makes me think of too, it's like it hopefully they can really land the plane with this whole multiverse saga. But if they can, I think there is a blueprint that we're starting to see where it's like, okay, we have the sacred timeline. You know, we have the MCU where that's kind of intact right now. And we're heading to Secret Wars eventually. But the Fox universe is dying. This other universe, you know, what the hell it could be. I mean, imagine this. The one thought I had, I don't think it's going to happen. There's a season two, all this. You know, imagine X-Men 97 goes totally sideways to end the season. And this is just the Wolverine, you know, this is just him from that universe where it's like, yep, everyone died in that universe. And here's this Wolverine we get in Deadpool 3. I don't think it's going to be the case, but it could be something similar to that, where this Wolverine, his Earth died. There's a bigger problem out there, right? There is a bigger issue. It's bigger than you and me. Let's go take care of it. You take that. So those two universes are dying. Maybe some other universes are dying. Incursions, whatever your explanation is. And then next year, Fantastic Four, right? They're going to be in an alternate reality. How do they get brought into the MCU? Their world's dying. You know, maybe that really starts to be, you know, and then right after Venom 3, that universe just dies and no one ever thinks of it ever again. That'd be awesome.
we let that one die.
We just like, imagine that joke. That'd be so funny. Oh, they'd never be able to do it, but that would be so funny. Like Deadpool being like, we just let that one die. Don't worry about that one. You see like the TVA screens, like Morbius. And
what about this one, Wade? Oh, that's okay.
Oh, that'd be so good. But yeah, I mean, one other thing I want to talk about, ask your opinion, which I just wrote an article for thedirect.com. It's posted now about Cassandra Nova, the main villain of this film, which I love. We don't know anything. honestly. Like, we know from the comic books who she is and what she can do, her connection to Professor X, similar powers, you know, telekinesis, can control minds, the whole shebang. How do you think her role is going to be in this movie? What are your expectations, and are you worried about her at all?
I'm not worried. I'm worried as in I'm scared of her. I think that she's going to be a great antagonist. I don't really know how she's going to, like, play into this whole multiversal story. The way, the vibe that I get from the trailer is that she's not pulling the strings on all this multiverse shit. I think that she and a group of all these Fox mutants and Fox characters
seen a couple
are
in that
stuck in the
shot.
Void.
Yeah.
And she's kind of leading this group or whatever. And when Deadpool and Wolverine at some point show up there with a plan to, with an idea to save people who could be pruned or could be cut away from the timeline and end up in the void as well, she gets wind of that and is like, well, can we use that to our benefit? And like, and if they're going to enter a universe from here, how can we get in on that? And obviously things will go awry. I think she looks crazy and scary. I forget the actress's name.
It's Anna
Corrin.
Emma Corrin. That's it.
And she looks terrifying. And I keep forgetting that she's in the movie, and then they showed it in the trailer and I'm like, oh man, like, she looks very intimidating. I love her playing around with Wolverine and, like, slamming him down on the ground with his adamantium bones and stuff.
Forcing his claws in. It reminded me of Magneto, you know, doing these X-Men rewatch movies. It's like,
I hope she is just straight up because she does have, like, close ties to Professor X in the comics and stuff like that. Mm. I hope she is just straight up a Professor X variant. Like, I think that would be really cool. A really cool way to, like, not introduce Professor X into the MCU, because we've gotten like a taste of it when he showed up in Multiverse of Madness, but it'd be very cool to show another multiversal like twist on a classic Marvel character without bringing Professor X proper into the MCU quite yet.
Yeah, it's kind of like Loki to Sylvie, you know, that kind of a variant style. And that's very, I mean, this is the most connected movie that we've gotten to Loki above Multiverse of Madness, because we are in the void. This is a setting of the MCU.
The TVA is just straight up there. Like,
the TVA is present. I expect characters from Loki to be in this movie. Like, I don't know how they aren't, how that doesn't work, you know? Like,
I think the best you're going to get is you may get a Miss Minutes thing, but I doubt we get any of the, like, TVA. There's been rumors of Owen Wilson. We
but
haven't
Mobius
seen
is
any of that
out,
yet.
You know? Isn't Mobius like done? Even though TVA, the time works differently there.
Yeah, we don't know where and when this happens, right?
There is no when, really. Exactly. Because, like, that's the thing me and Matt talked about a while ago after Loki season 2, where it's like, wait a second, you know, with them now shifting their gear at the end of season 2 to this, by the way, you know, the god of stories, Loki at the end of time, holding it all together, still being a multiverse being held together. And them now chasing after Kang variants, like, that's all you really need to know. Like, that's now the TVA. What the TVA was before is almost irrelevant. This is the new TVA. This is their new goal and their new system, and they are running fine, working operationally, and this is just what they're up to. And you can see how that could possibly come in together with Deadpool. That's how they come knocking at the door. Something's going on. They need him. And they're recruiting. I think that's kind of one thing that's kind of sneaking through. They are recruiting. This is a recruitment thing. They are getting Deadpool. Deadpool gets Wolverine. And I think this Wolverine is going to be, even though he let down his world, he is a fearsome Wolverine. Like, he is not a Logan-esque version where he's kind of battered and bruised. Like, yeah, he has the whiskey dick claws for a second. But I think once he's ready to roll, he's going to be unbelievable to stop. And we're going to get some amazing, amazing fight scenes. Before we move on to our next Red Brand news bit, one last question, because this is a very, very big trailer and everyone's going to be curious. We get a portal. The damn portals are back. We can't escape the portals. They are used for every hype moment in the MCU, it turns out. Even Andrew Garfield and Tom McGuire. I pointed out on Twitter, if you notice in the trailer, when the shot switches to them jumping into the portal, it's this white, like, glow. You don't see what's on the other side of the circle. So two questions. If you have any idea, who's the one that generates the, who creates the portal? Is Doctor Strange in this movie? And where do you think they're going? Because it seems like they're in the void, I think, right? Just based on context clues. And they are jumping to somewhere else.
Okay, as for first question, who is making the portal? That's a
Ned,
that
right?
That is a great question. Yeah, it's Ned. It's got to be Ned. The guy in the chair, he's just there. What are you doing? Watching porn. I think it would probably, I don't know if Benedict Cumberbatch is in this movie. I think it'd probably be Wong if it's going to be like a Sorcerer Supreme. I would love if there is a like Doctor Strange variant hanging out in the void. I think that could be very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's Charlize Theron. and where is it going? I think that this is going to be, I think everything we've seen so far from the trailers is in the first act, is very early on.
Yeah.
And I think that we're going to get a lot of, we're going to get what people wanted in Multiverse of Madness. I think here, where we're going to start jumping from universe to universe, except these universes are going to be movies. And so like them jumping through that portal is going to be them jumping into X-Men The Last Stand, or them jumping into Ben Affleck's Daredevil, or them jumping into an MCU film. Like I think that the only
Age of Ultron,
the universes, that's the only hint of universe we've gotten, is it's like that could be where they go, which could be really cool.
Yeah.
And so I hope that, I'd like to think that it is them jumping into some other movie. I think when we see the film, that white won't be white.
Yep, exactly.
You will see what it is. Or it'll be white and it'll flash to white as they jump through, and that'll be the first like teleportation moment of the movie, and they open up and it's all dark and Ben Affleck is standing there and Jennifer Garner's there as Elektra, and it's like, what's going on? And everyone's freaking out.
Dude, this movie is going to be so hype. Like, there's no way. And you nailed on the head. Like, I'm with you. I think they've only shown bits from the first half of the movie, at least. I mean, maybe little shots where you completely out of context, you wouldn't know if that's in the third act. That happens sometimes. And I really hope, I mean, we're going to discuss it on this podcast, but I really hope we don't get much more from this movie. Like, this is all anyone needs. I don't really want to know. Like, I don't need a Deadpool trailer, then a Wolverine, and then a Cassandra. I don't need, like, to see her side of the story yet. I would rather just wait, because as of right now, if you just told people this is a Deadpool versus Wolverine movie, we'd be all in. And it kind of looks that way. It's kind of like what they're trying to market it as. Obviously, it's going to last like one or two scenes and then we'll kind of move forward. But oh my gosh, I just had an idea. What are the odds that, holy shit. What are the odds that when they're fighting in the void, he's mind controlled by Cassandra at that time, Wolverine? Because remember at the end of the first trailer, when he talks to him and he's like knocked down on his back and he's like, hey, like, what's going on? Like, because you'd think, if you think about it logically, you think he's convincing him when he goes to recruit him. Why would they all of a sudden be fighting in the void? Just a thought.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, she's a mind controlling character.
Exactly.
She's,
and like, that's
the telepath. So,
and that's the
could.
Thing, like, can't understate, and we're going to move on a second, I promise. Can't understate like how powerful Professor X is in these movies and just in Marvel comics. And like, if she has those same powers, it's really hard to, you know, unless you have Magneto's metal cap, it's pretty hard to withstand. All right, moving on to our next story within the Red brand. This was a very big story for me personally. This is Tom Holland's, I think, first real official time discussing Spider-Man 4. And this is from Deadline. I'm going to read this entire little section just because I want to kind of get it all out there, and then we'll discuss from there. So he tells Deadline, they basically asked him if he's going to return to Spider-Man. He says, the simple answer is that I'll always want to do Spider-Man films, Tom told Deadline. I owe my life and career to Spider-Man. Yeah, no kidding. So the simple answer is yes, I'll always want to do more. The more complicated, in quotes, answer, Tom added, is how he and the Spider-Man team approach any follow-up to Spider-Man No Way Home, the third title in his web saga, without retreading any past themes, which I know is a big thing for me, for Matt, for anyone, really. It's like, how do you one-up Spider-Man No Way Home? What do you do? Here's what Tom said. We have the best in the business working toward whatever the story might be, but until we've cracked it, we have a legacy to protect.
Let's go.
Love that line. The third movie was so special in so many ways that we need to make sure we do the right thing. He later added, this is the first time in this process that I've been a part of the creative so early, which I think is really cool. Maybe it'll be like a, you know, EP on this one or just the producer. It's just a process where I'm watching and learning. It's just a really fun stage for me. Like I said, everyone wants it to happen, but we want to make sure we're not overdoing the same thing. So, Clyde, my question to you is, how did these quotes from Tom Holland make you feel about Spider-Man 4, the potential for Spider-Man 4?
I mean, it makes me feel that we're still a little ways away from this movie. It's been a long time since No Way Home. It's been the longest gap since Tom Holland took on the role. Now, since we've gotten a Tom Holland Spider-Man movie, which is wild, but I understand what he's saying. Like, they're suffering from the Endgame problem right now, where you build and build and you get this, you finally get this climax, this emotional, just like, boom, you go big, everything happens. And now they're looking at the drawing board going, oh shit, like, what do we do now? Because people are going to see Spider-Man 4 as a title come up on a poster and go, oh my gosh, that was so great last time when Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield showed up and all these villains and all this stuff happened. And then when they go to the theater and it's just I think this is ultimately what it's going to be.
Yeah.
A friendly neighborhood ground level Spider-Man story could feel a little underwhelming, but it will be a matter of branding that and pushing that, like, hey, like, we got it. Like, it's time to rebuild. Like, it's time to go back and start at that ground floor again. Like, think of that first saga as we've talked about it many times. And I'm sure you and Matt here on the podcast have talked about it many times. Like, that's the first chapter. That's the prologue almost, those first three movies of this Spider-Man story. And right now it's like, let the quote unquote origin story start now. Like, now it is that Peter Parker where we first meet Tobey Maguire's Peter Parker, or when we first meet Andrew Garfield. Like,
yeah,
now they've got to build from that, and then eventually you can build up to something big and crazy again. It's complicated, and I'm glad they're taking their time and not rushing into anything.
Yeah, I mean, taking their time is key here. I mean, I've been someone very antsy to learn about Spider-Man 4. I would have thought we would have heard about writers, directors, cast returning months ago. I mean, for Sony to be taking this time is very interesting. I mean, mainly, I think it is.
They're not taking their time on anything else.
Exactly. Like, they're pumping out. They're pumping out everything else. I mean, they're taking their time a little bit now and beyond the Spider-Verse, but live action, it's just, you know, whatever, throwing shit at a wall. But with Tom Holland's Spider-Man 4, time, I think, was needed between No Way Home and this film, because that was such an achievement for a movie, for a comic book movie, that everyone needed to let it breathe, you know, let that do its thing. Because like you said, like, that idea that maybe fans could be disappointed by it being a more grounded story. I would love a more grounded story. I would love this to be a connection to Daredevil Born Again specifically. I think that would be the best way possible. I think getting him being like the main character within this grounded New York story in the MCU is the best idea they could do.
Scorpion, I think, like, do something like that, follow up on that tease,
right,
and keep it, like, make New York a character again in Marvel, and make it feel like, make these street level stories feel as big as these multiversal epics. You just have to do it right. And you can't just do it because you need to do it.
Yeah. And, like, you know, we've had New York here and there. Hawkeye was a big thing. Then No Way Home came around right after, but that wasn't really like a New York story. That was very multiversal. We're going all in and out of New York City itself. And yeah, I mean, I would love for this to have a similar kind of tone as like an Amazing Spider-Man movie or a Raimi Spider-Man movie, where it does feel a little more like small, and it should. Like, that's the whole point of the end of No Way Home. There's the whole Zendaya debate. Will she return? Will she not? My bet is she will, whether it's good or bad for the plot. But I will say, just to wrap up here, I am very excited that Tom Holland is involved with the creation of this one. And I loved how he said, like, this is the first time he's in the process this early. And he has proven, especially since he called Bob Iger at the pub that one night to beg for Spider-Man to get back into the MCU. He has honestly proven himself to really understand the character, really know what's best for the character, and really give a shit. You know, that's what he says. We have a legacy to protect. And that, I think, really, it's freaking crazy that the star of the movie has to be the voice of reason, that they have a legacy to protect, because that kind of honestly hints at the idea that there is a back and forth of like, do we bring back the multiverse Spider-Mans? Do we make this a grounded story? How do we do Spider-Man 4? Because it really is a clean slate. No one knows who he is. He's on his own again. They could do anything with this movie. But I have a lot of faith because Tom Holland is directly involved. Okay, moving into, this is kind of a video game story, kind of a movie story, just a fun story overall. Keanu Reeves has been cast as Shadow in Sonic the Hedgehog 3. Klein, what are your thoughts?
I mean, it's great. Like, this is fan casting 101 right here. There was rumors for a long time it was going to be Hayden Christensen.
Yeah.
Which I would have been all over as well. But like, Keanu as Shadow is perfect. Give Shadow a gun, make him this edgy, broody, essentially teenager, is wild. If you had told me, even after the first Sonic, I'm a huge Sonic the Hedgehog fan. Like, I was a Sonic fan before I was a Mario fan. I had a Sega Genesis in the basement. We had one game. It was Sonic the Hedgehog 2.
That's crazy.
And if you had told me after that first Sonic movie that we would be where we are now, where Idris Elba is Knuckles and Keanu Reeves is Shadow.
Yeah.
I would laugh you out of the room. I would be like, there is no way I'm sure we would get a sequel to the Sonic movie, but there is no way that these big names would want to be involved in something like that. Yet here we are. We're a couple days away from the Knuckles TV show that's happening for some reason. Sonic 3 is coming later this year. I'm so excited. I am so excited to hear Keanu as Shadow. And like, this one really feels, the last movie felt like they were starting to dip their toes into honoring like the legacy of the games. We want to talk about legacy with Tom Holland and stuff, but like, the first one did not embrace the silliness and the lineage that this video game franchise has. Second one dipped its toes in. They're really, really, I think, in the third one, leaning into this, like, oh no, this is going to be one for the game fans. They've talked about bringing locations in and music in, and now Shadow's here, and it's going to be Keanu. Jim Carrey's back, despite swearing off acting. I'm excited for this movie, which is wild.
Me too. I like these movies. I don't know if I'm going to watch the Knuckles series. I don't know if I have time for all that. I think it's going to be very, very kiddie. I just don't think that's really going to be my cup of tea. Maybe like the first episode. I don't know. I wonder, is that going to be a weekly release or all at once?
It is all six all at once, and they're supposed to be short. I've heard rumors that you might be able to watch this entire thing in like 2 hours.
Maybe I will watch it then. Because I like the first two movies. And I got to say, like, this is great news with Keanu, because this is going to be awesome. I love how fan castings are so much easier when it's just voice acting, you know?
Yeah.
Just zoom in. Just say some lines. Good. We'll write you a check. When Shadow appears in the post-credit scene of Sonic 2, that was a moment. That was amazing. Like, my theater kind of went crazy. I was at like a really early screening for that, like a Thursday night thing, for Sonic 2. And I remember there were some like really excited, you know, I could tell video game fans in the crowd, and they were eating that up. Speaking of something that I'm not really eating up, did you see the Transformers 1 trailer that recently released? We've got Chris Hemsworth. Did you watch it, Klein?
I did. Oh, yeah, I did. I love Transformers, so I watched it.
I like Transformers okay. I like Transformers, the idea, more than I've liked any of these recent movies. Like, I don't love the movies, but I still like Transformers. Like, growing up, watching the cartoons and stuff, like, Transformers are cool. Chris Hemsworth is in this movie. What were your thoughts?
I think I am a lot higher on this film than a lot of people are. I'm not a huge fan of, there's something about the look of them, the Transformers themselves, that I'm not into. Leading into this movie, I've been talking to people and saying, like, watch out. This is going to be the surprise hit of the year. It's got a great cast. You got Scarlett Johansson, you got Chris Hemsworth, Brian Tyree Henry, Keegan-Michael Key. There we go. All these like great actors. Seeing this trailer, it did knock me down a couple of pegs. I'm still excited to see it. It is a children's movie made for children.
Yeah.
But those can work. I'm a 7-year-old at heart, so we'll see how I actually feel about it. But I don't know. I've been wanting, ever since they gave us the prologue to Bumblebee, which I would say is one of the better Transformers films that is on Cybertron, like, I've wanted a Transformers movie without any humans, because the beginning of that movie is awesome. And we're getting it. I just wish it wasn't like this. I had hope coming out of Mutant Mayhem and beyond, like in the Spider-Verse movies. And like, we've been getting these, yeah, they're for kids, but they're also for adults as well. And they're like leaning into that like childhood nostalgia a bit. And I don't think that this is really that, but I'll go see it. I'll go see a Transformers film. It's the cross I bear.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm going to see this one. This trailer let me down. Like, I was moderately excited. I remember when I was writing my big like box office piece back in December for 2024. It's like Transformers 1, you know, look out. It was one of those where it's like under the radar, didn't make my top 10, but like maybe it should. Like, kind of like you were just saying, like, this could be a surprise hit. Transformers is a big, you know, a big IP. A lot of kids are going to go see this movie. I thought this looked terrible, man. Like, when I watched, I thought the animation was bad. I thought it just... nothing about it was appealing to me. I wish the animation looked so different. And it's like, damn, can we not get one Transformers movie that like looks great, that just like everyone loves? Like, I don't know. I just don't see like the tender love and care that like the new TMNT movie got, or like obviously the Spider-Verse movies, but that's on its own tier. It just didn't, even like Mario, like, I don't know. I just... nothing really was attractive to me about this. Like, I thought their faces just looked silly. Like, and
the faces really bugged me. And
yeah,
the thing that is weird to me is it's Paramount. Like, it's the same studio as Mutant Mayhem.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's TMNT.
Coming out of that TMNT movie, I thought for sure, oh, like they're gonna try and do this with Transformers, and it's like, yeah, no, like this is just an animated kids movie that the kids will go and enjoy.
Surprisingly generic, in my opinion, where it's like, man, it's just not like, I could see kids going to see it. If I like had a kid, I'd want to take them to this movie. But like, as you know, an adult that likes Transformers, okay, it's like, I don't know. Like, I'd like to be invested with this cast, but the trailer did not do it for me. Okay, moving back into video games, the Fallout series is apparently really good. I've never played Fallout, but Klein, you know all about Fallout and the new series on Amazon.
Yeah, on Amazon Prime.
All Amazon Primes. It's been renewed for a season 2, which was surprising. Me and you, Klein, have talked a lot over the last few years about the video game to TV, the video game to movie renaissance we are currently living in. And Fallout seems to be the next iteration of that. I don't know if Borderlands is going to be, but Fallout is the next iteration of that. So talk to me about Fallout, how good it is, and what you're expecting for season 2 and video game, you know, adaptations beyond.
Well, this is a great video game adaptation. I think last year everyone jumped on The Last of Us train, which I loved.
Yes.
Like, it was the best few months of my life, telling people after episode 1, you guys got to watch this, and just seeing you and Matt and Jack Pughes and all these people in my life who wouldn't necessarily sit down and watch that fall in love with that world and fall in love with those characters. Coming into Fallout, I'd been telling you and Matt, I think I've said it here on the podcast, this is going to be that for 2024.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen all the episodes. I sat down and watched it. We just did a review over on Controller Club, my video game podcast, if you want like a big spoiler-filled review. It nails it. This is up there with The Last of Us as one of the best video game adaptations ever made.
Wow.
It's a completely different feeling. I think the biggest thing I could say that I'm not a huge fan of with it was that it all dropped at once. Because of that, the conversation could not build. And so people like you, people like Matt, people like Jack Pughes again, couldn't get that momentum, couldn't get that growing week after week and seeing more people jump in. It's a different kind of adaptation than The Last of Us, because The Last of Us is very much we're taking the story of a game and just doing it beat for beat. This is set in the world of Fallout. It takes place on the timeline of the Fallout games, but it is completely separate from the games themselves.
Yeah.
Which I think is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's showrunners were Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy, who Jonathan Nolan, The Dark Knight, both Nolan and Joy did Westworld for HBO. Mm. And it, like, this show is really good. It's really funny. It's violent. It's very sadistic. It's got twists and turns that will have your brain leaking out your ears by the end of it. It's a great, great, great show and a fantastic, authentic feeling adaptation of the Fallout franchise.
Yeah, I find it so fascinating. It's great. I mean, I think The Last of Us is definitely the hands down the best video game adaptation we've gotten in terms of television, in terms of movies. I think just because of the popularity, everyone watched that. This is probably blasphemy. I feel like it's just as big of a HBO show than it is as a video game at this point, where it's like there's so many people that know The Last of Us as the HBO show, not as the, you know, the PS3 game. Which is fantastic. That's what you want. Now, with the Fallout series, it's very interesting to me how I love the idea where it's not like adapting the same story. It is just taking place in that world. I think there's so many universes that could do that. There's so many game universes that could do that where you just fit into, because a lot of video games, people don't know, is very cinematic, you know, where you're getting this big time story. And you're kind of just playing along, and sometimes they're more difficult than others, but so many games these days are just so cinematic. I mean, it's kind of what's happening in a backwards way with the Star Wars games right now, you know, with the Jedi games, where obviously everything in Star Wars is pretty much canon for the most part, and they just take place on a timeline. So it's cool to see that's what they're doing. I'm glad it's good. I might check it out. I've never played the game. Like, I have literally no. So I guess the other question, does it matter?
I know a lot of people like you who have never touched the game. My Controller Club co-hosts, who also work at the direct.com, Lauren Rouse and Tom Drew, have never touched a Fallout game in their life.
Oh, really?
They loved it. They loved it. So Lauren specifically, like, it's her favorite TV show of the year so far. And she's never played a Fallout game before. I have played the games, and there are details and stuff in this show that are now canon and a part of the world, and have, I guess, always been a part of that world that I didn't know, that came out as big, like, oh my gosh, twist moments of like, I didn't know that's what happened. But it's a very, very cool world. This kind of mix of 1950s and post-apocalypse, because it's essentially the world is like retrofuturism, and then the nukes fall, and then it's 200 years later and everything's gone to shit. And it's just it's very silly, but very well written and very, very well acted. There's a lot of cameos in this show where you'll be like, oh my gosh, like, how'd they get them? Like, every episode has like one or two characters pop up where it's like, oh, like, holy shit, I didn't know they were in this. And yeah, it's great. It's 8 episodes. You can do it in a weekend. It's pretty good.
Huh. Yeah. Well, for those listening that have not played Fallout, it definitely seems like a good series to check out if you have the time to. Me personally, it's like, oh my gosh, I have so much I want to watch. You know, it's like, add to the list. And then will I ever get to it? It's back to that whole thing where it's like, I mean, I've been trying to get into Shogun and I keep like forgetting about it. I keep feeling behind on it. It's those moments where, and things like stock, like, pile up. I'm busy watching X-Men movies for this podcast. Anyway, last bit of news for the day. A Klein special. Can't believe this news dropped and you're going to be on the podcast. This is so fun. I've got Steven Spielberg and Martin Scorsese updates. I forget, what was it? Deadline? Variety? Some outlet, some trade posted published an article that was this big update on these two iconic all-time.
It was Hollywood Reporter, I think.
Batting 1,000 over here. Whatever. one of them. So here's what we got. Leonardo DiCaprio has been cast as Frank Sinatra, allegedly, he's in talks, in a biopic directed by Martin Scorsese. Jennifer Lawrence would be starring as his second wife, Ava Gardner. Very interesting. Also on the Scorsese side, Andrew Garfield and Miles Teller are being eyed to star in Martin Scorsese's Jesus movie, which has been already talked about a lot. Steven Spielberg is set to direct a UFO film based on his own original idea. David Cope will write the script, apparently. And then kind of what kind of brought them two together for this article, both of them, Scorsese and Spielberg, are going to be executive producers on a Cape Fear TV series for Apple TV+. Klein, of all this crazy news that dropped that seemed like no production date, no anything, just ideas, what got you most excited? What piqued your interest the most?
I'm most excited for the Frank Sinatra biopic. Leo, I love Leo. I love Scorsese. And this to me feels like it could be really something special. I've seen some people talking online that in a way that like this Jesus movie could kind of be the last of his religious epics.
Yeah.
Because he's done a couple, Silence and Last Temptation of Christ and stuff. This could be about, he's done these crime movies where we've gotten like Goodfellas, which is about the mob, and then we've gotten into like Casino, which is about the criminal kind of underworld bleeding into business in America, and then we've gotten the Irishman, which is about like unions and crime in that and the end of that. And people are saying that this movie, which is being branded as a Frank Sinatra biopic, could be the ending of his kind of criminal side of filmmaking and about the mafia and the crime world leading into entertainment. Because Frank Sinatra later in his life got tied up in some very shady people. And so I think that could be very, very cool. And I'll watch anything that Scorsese and DiCaprio do. So I'm very excited about that film. Second for me would be Spielberg's UFO movie, because just go back to what you're good at, man. Like he can make an alien movie, and I would watch another one from him. And he's done some good stuff recently. I know that some people are like, Spielberg's old, he might be kind of past his prime, but the West Side Story movie that came out during the pandemic is a masterpiece. I think it's one of the best movies that people just have not seen because it didn't come to theaters. And Fablemans was good as well. So
I loved the Fablemans. That's what I was going to say. I adore the Fablemans. I think that's one of his best movies ever, in my opinion. And that's obviously saying something. For me, I love Silence. I think that's one of Scorsese's all-time best movies, an underrated movie of his. It's kind of a one-time watch deal. It's not like the most rewatchable movie, but it is such an impactful film. It is so well done, and it is so well acted by Andrew Garfield. So I think the Jesus movie would be, potentially could be incredible. The premise of it, who knows? You know, not really sure what he's getting into, but Garfield coming back for another, you know, religious-themed, spiritual-themed movie by Scorsese. Sign me up. I mean, day one, please. And yeah, I mean, Frank Sinatra getting a biopic, it feels like it's going to be, you know, obviously Jennifer Lawrence being second wife, like later in his life, because that's a big debate. It's like, can Leo do Frank Sinatra?
Yeah, and I don't know if I want that, right? Like, I don't know if I want this to be, I say what you will about Bohemian Rhapsody, but like, I don't want this to be Bohemian Rhapsody for Frank Sinatra. Like, I don't want this from beginning to end story. If he wants to take a slice of that and just like tell a interesting story within that, I think that could be very cool. And I don't think Scorsese's talents are best suited even to this, like, I don't know. We're getting so many of these. We're getting a Michael Jackson biopic next year. We just got the Bob Marley one.
We've had two Elvis movies.
Jeremy Allen White is making a Bruce Springsteen biopic. Timothy Chalamet's doing Bob Dylan, right? Like, we're getting so many of these, and a lot of them are this kind of by the book, just like go from like tell the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you're selling it as a biopic for Frank Sinatra, I think that, sure, like that might be how you have to sell it, but I think it could be so much more, and it could be this, as people are kind of talking about, this diving back into the world of organized crime that Scorsese is so good at looking at.
Yeah, it is interesting because Scorsese is known for having films, especially about like specific men or people groups that take place over a long period of years. You know, he's a lot of his movies aren't just like take place over a couple days. You know, it's not Ferris Bueller's Day Off. You know, it's films that have this like long story to be told. Like we just saw Killers of the Flowers of the Flower Moon. Like it was this long story. It was this drawn out thing. And I think it would be fun if we just kind of get this. I agree. I do not want I like Bohemian Rhapsody personally. I do not want this for Frank Sinatra from Scorsese. Like just give me a moment. You know, give me like you start when he's X age, maybe even like I think the movie should start in many ways or whatever, you peak. Know. Yeah, at his peak or like even right after his peak, you know, something like that where it's like he's already the guy. He is Frank Sinatra. I don't really need to see Leo working his way up, singing singing tunes and with tapping his foot. De-aging
technology going
on. Yeah, that sounds like... terrible. And like, can Leo even sing? How's that even going to work? Like, I don't think that needs to be the focal point. I think, like you said, like adding the crime element or whatever else, like those ideas and themes could be so cool here. But yeah, in general, it's an exciting time. I mean, these filmmakers are not getting any older, you know, or any younger, I should say. They are getting older. So it is awesome to hear, specifically Scorsese here being like, I've got these two ideas. You know, I want to make these two very different movies, very different potential talents involved. And I want to see him. You know, I don't care which one comes first. I want to see him make these because I thought Killers of the Flower Moon was really excellent. I thought it was a great movie last year. Not a lot of people saw it, but I thought it was better than The Irishman, in my opinion, you know, in terms of like some of his latest movies. And we need to see, I think we should definitely see him make more movies. I'd love to see him make more movies, get these greenlit immediately, get someone involved, whether it's, you know, Apple or maybe Netflix, some kind of studio, get these done, get these over with, and hopefully win some Academy Awards this time. I felt bad for him at the latest Academy Awards. It was kind of sad.
It's been a couple films for him that he, I think they're, oh, for
he's only won a couple, like it's 16 crazy.
16 or something of his last 16 yeah. nominations, which is nuts. It's wild. Yeah.
there's something about the, and then we're gonna move on after this. There's something about the Academy Awards that just kind of, it's always like the new and the fresh sometimes wins.
And he's also, especially for the last two films, he made a movie with Apple and he made a movie with Netflix before that. And
yeah.
So like the Netflix bias is very, like the anti-Netflix bias is very, very evident. They've been right. trying to win awards and they haven't. And then Apple, they haven't really had a ton of success other than they've won Best Picture. Like they are the only streamer that has done that with Coda. But other than that, they have not had a ton of success at the Academy Awards. So
yeah.
I think he's also kind of the studios traditionally are not making the kind of movies with the amount of money that he wants that would win Academy Awards. And so he's forced to go to these places that are just handing money out to people or were, no one's handing money out to anyone right now. And
yeah.
And then he's putting all of his eggs in the streaming basket. So.
Well, Klein, I hope sometime before the year 2030, we'll have you back on to review one of these movies if and when they get made.
We can only hope.
let me know. Let the audience know. What are you up to with the Direct and your podcast, The Controller Club?
I got a lot of exciting stuff brewing at thedirect.com. Some I can talk about, some I can't talk about. You can head over there for some coverage over about Shogun's finale. I've been covering Shogun pretty extensively for the website. Just quick mention of Shogun, that is my favorite show of the year. As absolutely incredible TV, is since probably not since peak Game of Thrones I've had this much fun with the television show. So head on over to the Direct, look for my coverage on that. And then over on Controller Club, as I said, we just did a full deep dive spoiler review of the Fallout TV series. You can get that wherever podcasts are. If we're not where you want us to be, let me know and I will put us there. But that's Controller Club. You can find us, wherever you're listening to this right now.
That's awesome. And now it is time. Matt's back for X-Men 97 Episode 6 review. Before diving into X-Men 97, just a quick little update here. So me and Matt's connection was very bad while we were recording this part of the podcast. So please bear with us. The review is great. We got out all of our thoughts. It is a little bit edited. You may notice, you may not. Hopefully you don't. Please enjoy. Hopefully you can hear Matt well. It should be all right, but just a fair warning.
All right, we are back with another review of X-Men 97, Episode 6, Life Death, Part 2, Part 2, Du Le Feu, or whatever the Joker title.
You cannot get that right.
It's one of those things where, like, I don't think I've read it out loud while reading it yet.
Right.
For whatever reason, when I try to think about what it says, it's not right.
I got to shout out Klein, who's on this episode today. Oh, sure, He's the one that actually said it out loud to me the first time, because he is Canadian and he took French in high school. Big surprise. and it's Folie à Deux.
Folie à Deux.
Yeah. Once you read it, once you like actually pronounce it and then you look at it and read it, it actually makes sense.
Can I tell you, just listening to your voice, you sound like you're having fun saying it now that.
Oh, I am.
You know how it sounds. You know
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah. Even though I always say Joker too, but when this brings up, it gets brought up, I'll say Folie à Deux.
It's definitely Joker too. I mean, that's definitely the easiest way.
That's what I'm saying it. That's what I'm calling it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's how I'm going to go about it. Anyway.
Life, death.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Folie à Deux.
Folie à Deux. X-Men 97, Life, Death, Folie à Deux. This is coming off the heels of what many believe is not only the best episode of this season, but one of the best episodes of Disney Plus that we have gotten overall, not just Marvel, but just overall on Disney Plus. So, you know, a lot of high bar set heading into episode 6. David Thompson, yeah. I'm very excited to see how you felt about this part 2 episode following up last week's Remember It.
So I really liked this episode, but it does not stand a chance to be anywhere near episode 5, in my opinion. Honestly, like the biggest thing for me was that there were some moments in episode 6, Life, Death, part 2, that were just a little bit confusing for me. Some moments that were awesome, like there are some moments in this episode that are amazing, especially near the end. I mean, everything with Storm, that entire just story arc in this series has been so awesome to see. But I guess my confusion is in spoilers, so I will save it. But at the current moment, it's like I enjoyed the episode. It was just part of me was like, I can't wait to talk about it with you because you're a lot more knowledgeable about the X-Men animated series, X-Men in general, to maybe clear things up a bit, and then I would probably enjoy the episode even more in retrospect. So, Matt, what did you think?
I really enjoyed this episode, and there were so many different things about it that pulled me in as a diehard X-Men fan that I am, not just from the animated series, but also the comics. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting to me that they pulled a story to kind of pair with the Storm stuff here that is very deep weeds X-Men stuff. It isn't something we've seen so far this season. It isn't something we've interacted with in a big way. It's actually a huge storyline from older seasons of the X-Men animated series. So it was an interesting choice. But I thought, as somebody who is, you know, familiar with what was going on, they caught me up pretty well. And then once they did, I was all the way in. It was as weird as X-Men can be. It was as deep as X-Men can be. All at the same time, being insanely cool, which... Yeah. We also know X-Men can be. I was just so impressed with all the different things that this episode did and how impactful each element was while still having bits and moments of just uncut cool. And I think that's one of the things that makes this IP so awesome. But like you said, we can't really get too deep into it without diving into spoilers. So let's do that.
Now you want to get nuts? Come on. Let's get nuts.
Yeah, I mean, it was mainly just Professor X, obviously. I wasn't expecting him to appear in this series. I was expecting him to just be dead, you know, and never hear from him and see from him again. Obviously, we go very cosmic in this episode, which was interesting to me. Mm-hmm. We hadn't really been there yet in this series. Obviously, I know I'm sure in the animated series it's gone there. So honestly, it was like, all of that, like that entire part of the show, I'm just like, what the, like there, I got some of the Marvel connections, some of those like Easter eggs, like, you know, some of the ideas of these alien, you know, we get the Kree, we get Ronin. That was really cool, you know, just like as a MCU fan. And I thought it was, I also did think like deep spoilers here. Like I thought it was cool when, you know, he puts everyone in the classroom and then everything goes to hell, you know, that was really, really, really awesome. I thought the end of the episode was really awesome, getting Mr. Sinister again. So I guess like I just kind of sat there taking it all in, and it's really been after that that I've been like, what is Professor X up to, you know, like what is, like what was going on at the end of when we last saw him, where he died, to like what is happening now, where it's like, you know, he can't I got the idea, but it felt weird to me, I guess, just as like a watcher of this show, where it's all of a sudden this like, oh, is he going to marry her, or is he going to like, you know, be there for his people, for the X-Men, for the mutants? And It was just interesting. It wasn't what I was expecting.
And yeah, that's kind of the bold take that they went with this, is bringing back the Shire, Professor X, Lilandra storyline without really priming new audiences with what that is or any inkling of what that could be, you know, before this episode. And like, if anybody who's a deep X-Men fan in the comics or has seen the original series, they know Lilandra, they know the Shire. They're such a big part of X-Men lore, especially in the show, because it was so tied to the Dark Phoenix stuff. Like, this is some of the more popular X-Men, you know, characters, I guess, you know, Professor X adjacent characters, not necessarily because of like their widespread popularity, but because of their involvement in the Dark Phoenix stuff.
Right.
In the show.
Makes them notable.
Yes, absolutely. So
I wouldn't have known. Yeah, exactly.
The fact that they jumped in there with really no primer, with really no, you know, like, hey, by the way, this is who it is, I thought was like a bold thing. But for me, once they got there, once they kind of got through whatever introduction they had to Lilandra, the Shire, Charles's situation, you know, being her husband to be, what that means in this empire and the politics behind it, I thought that they were just bat 1,000 in there. And so I understand the confusion, but for me, it was, you know, really great work there. And how cool was it how galactic and space ridden, which the X-Men always are in the comics and in the show, not so much in the original trilogy that most people know about, but for that to be such big scale, such, you know, intergalactic, political, amazing, like bombastic themes. And then you have the Storm stuff that is so grounded, so spiritual, so character driven.
Yeah.
Such an awesome black and white within this episode that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, and by the way, really cool. Speaking of Storm, Beau DeMeo, you know, the writer that was fired, and it's a crazy situation. But him, he's been active on Twitter. We've talked about him before. He said how Storm's flying scene at the end was inspired by Man of Steel. Like, he confirmed that. The first flight, I thought that was so cool. Like, as a Man of Steel fan, and like kind of seeing that when watching, like, it was interesting. This show was very much so two parts, and not even like one and the other, that kind of mixed them in a little bit. But it was interesting to me, like, trying to kind of play catch up on like what was going on with, you know, this cosmic element of X-Men that, in my experience, I haven't really seen. You know, you were just talking about with the animated series, comics, like, it was like, wow, I never really knew the X-Men got this cosmic. It felt very MCU to me in that sense. I mean, even having like these similar looking aliens, the Kree. So it, in a way, it was like, wow, like, this is kind of the blueprint once again, but for a whole different reason, you know, a whole different section of X-Men, of going into space, of something that I personally haven't had a lot of experience with, but could totally see them using these kinds of ideas and the X-Men in space in live action, which is kind of what we saw in the Marvels, right? I mean, was that like the first time we've seen kind of the X-Men in space, like in live action? I don't remember a time in the live action movies.
Yeah, so they play with it kind of in the rebooted-ish ones, the new generation X-Men. They do go to space, you know what I mean? But and there's even a joke.
That Apocalypse?
I think Quicksilver says it, like, oh, so we're just going to space now? And it's such a cool thing that this show is able to kind of showcase it the way that the animated series and the comics have. And yeah, you're right. It gives it an MCU film around it that I don't think really you know, has been shown, especially in the movies that we've all seen, but more specifically just in any sort of general public kind of way outside of the cartoon itself.
Yeah.
And so, you know, from there, overall, you know, I agree with you. I think if you had no idea that who Lilandra was or who the Shire was or why Professor X is with these people at all, I would completely also be confused. But
yeah,
I think at something that they did to curve that maybe a little bit is kind of make this a two-sided episode. Like, there's so much Storm stuff that you can grab onto. And then also, I mean, they gave Professor X an all-time Professor X scene, an all-time Professor X speech. Like, they did do the Professor X thing that we all know and love, which is, you know, always fun to see.
That was really cool. And honestly, for me, it was Storm and Forge, that side of the story, that really kind of anchored me to the episode. Like, like we talked about, like, kind of how I opened it up, where I was a little bit confused, kind of like, okay, I felt more like learning, less of like you know, understanding, enjoying going through. But like this Storm story with Forge has been so well done this series, and like getting that moment, that epic line that she says, and then moving towards her actually getting her powers back, flying through. By the way, the animation of when she gets her powers back, the literal like storm, lightning, clouds, thunder, that was awesome. That looked so cool. I think there was even some times when it was the space part where like I wasn't at, it felt like very it was super busy, and there was like a lot of explosions, a lot going on, where it was almost like mush on the screen. It was like all kind of the same thing going on. Like I wasn't like wowed by the animation. It just felt very 1990s in a way, you know, where it's just like a lot of loud kind of colorful explosions. But man, when Storm gets her powers back and we get the music, we get her what she says, we get just the close-ups of her, and that was just so epic and exactly what I wanted from this episode going in.
Yeah, they are thunder. Let them thunder, for I am lightning.
Oh, badass.
Come on, I mean, she is the greatest X-Men character of all time.
I am lightning. It's so cool.
She just kicks so much ass, and it's such a moment for her to come back and to do it in like a mental health kind of way. Like it wasn't some potion. It wasn't some, you know, magic voodoo, which, by the way, I mean, fuck, Forge's grandma being a sorcerer of magic or whatever it is, a master of the mystic arts. Come on, dude.
Mm-hmm.
That's some MCU shit you can't get past. But for her, for Storm to overcome her stuff simply, you know, for lack of a better word, through therapy, like that's such a cool thing. And you know, to get into winners, if I may, to get into winners, like that is mine, is, you know, all the different stories that were told here. It's the balancing act of the episode, because Storm's whole journey of self-love and getting over her demons, and, you know, she even had a great monologue too about how, you know, our demons, you know, as soon as we accept them and learn to live with them, that's when they lose their power. That's when they stop controlling her. That's when she's able to, you know, step out and control them right back. And as simple as that sounds, that's very hard for a lot of people to do. So that story, along with Charles's story about, you know, the politics of it, you know, because of where he's from and the race that he is, even where he's from, and all those different things, these much higher level beings, you know, can't comprehend him being a part of their whole thing. And that is another great story that they told, that again was mirrored by an incredible speech. And I've been thinking about it all day. Like, it really is an amazing line when the guy goes, might is right, you know, something that Earth humans, Americans, have claimed as like, you know, some sort of, you know, to be on top is the best thing. And right. Charles just is so good with it. The rhyme that supports the lie, for me to feel more means you have to feel less. And then he goes, because why? Mm-hmm. Like, because why? Who made up these silly rules? Like when he said, like, as weird as it might be, and I feel like I'm looking too deep into an X-Men cartoon, a group of people who feel like that means they're trying to put me down. Why? Because why? Who made that rule? And that was another incredible thing that they added into this, along with the Storm stuff. And then we get Milky Way Ghetto. Are you kidding me? Milky Way Ghetto? What an incredible line by Lilandra's sister, who I forget her name of. But like, what an awesome shutdown to where Charles is from, this Milky Way Ghetto. Like, we're not even the best fucking planet in the Milky Way. You kidding me? Like,
right.
I just thought the balancing act of the Game of Thrones-ness of it all. Mm. They have so many different characters, so many different stories. And then at the end, we get tied back into our main story. Like, that is so Game of Thrones. Thank to God. Have 90% of the episode, and then the last 10% drags you back into the main story of what's going on. Like, I loved the balancing act of all of it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that was awesome. I loved the fact, like you just said, how it got back to that main plot at the end, and it did push it forward. It did connect. You know, there are times when some shows do go off and do their own thing, tell these kind of like side stories, I guess, or just, you know, stories that aren't on the main track of what we just saw, and then you never actually get a connection. You have to wait till next week. This was, I think, really great how we were able to actually see something progress a little bit or see something connect. My big winner, honestly, I don't need to repeat myself, but it was just Storm's storyline coming to a I guess, a peak here, coming to a close. I don't want to say close because now she's going to be back, I would assume, like, as Storm. And what does that mean for all the shit that just went down? You know, this is now huge. It's a very impactful thing that she's back. And yeah, I think that was so well done. And this being Life Death Part 2, it being set up at the beginning of the series, like, I think this being kind of like a three-part, four-part arc for Storm here was just really well done overall. Now being able to kind of look back at her losing her powers and now gaining them back.
Just having the way that they've paced Storm throughout this entire season has been really cool. Like, she has really been off on her own side story, doing her own side thing, but they did such a good job in her introduction, Omega level threat. Like, they put her up on this pedestal to crash her back down and build her back up even higher than she was. Aurora Monroe needs to be the face of whatever the MCU X-Men are moving forward. It's a shame that, Halle Berry, and then even in the reboot, Storm is always pushed aside the way that she is. But I mean, this is just another showcase that, X-Men are the perfect vehicle for different stories, and the characters that they have, for whatever reason, always show up in how they tell these stories, but also just how cool they are doing it. You know what I mean? Like, it's doing it with style, and it Storm's the epitome of, being this Shakespearean, over the top, melodramatic, weather queen, but always with style. It's never weird. It's always cool. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what it is about Aurora that makes it do that, but can't wait to see more of it.
Yeah, me neither, dude. I'm really excited for the next four episodes. I already kind of said my loser, by the way, sure, if I had one, was just that confusing element where it felt like, as a non-animated series, this was the first time genuinely it felt like as a non-animated series watcher, I was lost and I felt more confused than anything else, which is a shame. I kind of just, it's an animated show at the end of the day. I kind of just like went with it and tried to like figure it out as we went, but I would say is my biggest loser, because it wasn't set up at all. It wasn't really anything. He was just, he was just back and we were in space, and I had no idea what was going on for a little bit there.
They could have spent way more time trying to compact the foundation of this story into something digestible so people can get more caught up as they're watching this episode. But for a story that's so, weird and, deep and, seasons long in the original animated run, I think they made a good choice. If they're going to do this, at least, just give it to us. Don't hold our hands. If you get it, fine. If you don't, just try to enjoy it the best you can. I appreciated that more than spending 10 minutes of this episode catching everybody, like, with flashbacks or, a character being like, well, remember this time? Like, we didn't get that here. And I think that that was a smart move, because you can do that too much, I think, and it can take away from the impact. But, that is this week's episode, Life Death Part 2. Maybe a little more, for the ones who know. It's an interesting episode, but I think certain parts of it, I think, still are hitting the peaks of X-Men 97. I think we can both agree, at least from a Storm standpoint, we are still riding a very big high heading into next week, which is called Bright Eyes. I wonder what that could be. Very excited. Episode 7, Bright Eyes. And then we're followed up by a 3-part finale. I mean, we are getting into something special here. If they can stick this landing, we're in a good spot. But we will find out next week. For now, let's dive into a classic in a different way, a different kind of X-Men. Ladies and gentlemen, X-Men The Last Stand. And your starting lineup for X-Men The Last Stand: Hugh Jackman as Logan / Wolverine, Halle Berry as Aurora Monroe / Storm, Ian McKellen as Eric Fletcher / Magneto, Patrick Stewart as Professor Charles Xavier, Tomka Jensen as Jean Grey / Phoenix, Anna Paquin as Rogue, Kelsey Grammer as Dr. Hate McCoy / Beast, James Marsden as Scott Summers / Cyclops, Rebecca Romijn, Stamos, as Mystique, Sean Ashmore as Bobby Drake / Iceman, Aaron Stanford as John / Pyro, Vinnie Jones as Kane Marco / Juggernaut, Elliot Page as Kitty Pryde / Shadowcat, Daniel Coderm as Peter Rasputin / Colossus, Ben Foster as Warren Worthington III / Angel, and about a million more mutants and X-Men characters.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot.
There's so much
standing around in this show, movie.
Multiple man, Trask.
Multiple man, the guy from Grey's Anatomy and Euphoria. Psylocke.
Yeah, right. directed by Brett Ratner, who is the director of Rush Hour. The Rush Hour first two. I don't know if he did the third one. Rush Hour, one of my favorite action movies. Red Dragon, which is a very good Hannibal Lecter sequel, spinoff, whatever it is. And Hercules, the one with The Rock, which is one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Oh, that makes sense.
Truly makes bad sense. Movie.
Yeah.
Do you know the story behind why is Brett Ratner not Bryan Singer?
No. I'd love to know, though.
Oh, you're going to hate it. The reason it's not Bryan Singer is because Bryan Singer was thefted by Warner Brothers Studios to do another
Superman.
To do another comic book movie.
Oh, Superman that's Returns. What it is.
And do you want to be even more mad? He took James Marsden with him. So James Marsden, one of the main characters of Superman Returns. He's not anybody of note, but he's just like Lois Lane's other guy or whatever.
I was going to say, who the hell is he in Superman Returns? I don't even remember
He's
that.
The same character he is in every movie.
Oh my gosh. Besides this one where he doesn't exist.
Well, the reason he doesn't exist, the reason he's in it for 20 minutes is because he left
20 to go minutes.
To Superman Returns.
Yeah.
He left to go do Superman Returns. Wild. Wild.
That is a moment in time. That's crazy.
There's an alternate universe where that doesn't happen. We actually get a Cyclops in this movie.
And a whole different story, probably. Anyway.
David Thompson, we're at the end of our original trilogy for the Foxman rewatch. We'll be ranking these things at the end. It's just a heads up to you. Mm-hmm. What are your overall thoughts on X-Men, The Last Stand?
Yeah, I was totally let down by this one. Like, I knew it was going to be bad, and I had never seen this movie before. That was the thing. I haven't seen this one, and then next week I haven't seen Origins Wolverine. Mm-hmm. Can't wait. So excited. This one, to me, like, you could totally tell it was directed by someone different, mm-hmm. and it felt like they were moving in the right direction, because I thought the first X-Men was okay. Second one gets better. Not that great, but it gets better. And then I thought this one, it's like, okay, I knew it was going to be bad, but just trying to live in the moment a little bit, it's like they had the building blocks for something. And even the way it opens, I didn't necessarily totally hate, but oh my gosh, from the Magneto in this movie, I love Magneto. He's so much worse in this movie. Like, I feel like he's much less conflicted in this movie, and he's poorly written and maybe even poorly directed. And it's upsetting to me because I thought he was such a strong suit of X1, the Magneto storyline and his connection to the Brotherhood. And this, he gets a little too much mustache twirling. And the Dark Phoenix Jean Grey storyline character is unforgivable. Like, and I've seen Dark Phoenix, the Sophie Turner version, you know.
Charlize Theron. No. Jessica Chastain.
Yeah. This is just pathetic. They don't even try. It's there to be there. And man, it upset me watching this. It was still fun because we're having fun with these things. It's a rewatch, but it upset me.
It's objectively upsetting. You know what I mean? Yeah. I will say it's probably the most fun of the three, right?
Yeah,
like it has fun at least.
There's some kind of funny dialogue here and there.
Very big picture, surface level. What's the problem with this movie? Dark Phoenix is arguably the greatest comic book story ever written, and to have that story in the same movie as the Cure story, which is also a great, amazing, long, drawn out, like thoughtful X-Men story.
Very cool idea. Very cool idea.
We'll get to that. little winter spoiler there for you. this has Rise of Skywalker vibes all over it, in that somebody else directed this movie and could not have cared less about the character progression from the previous movies. Like,
yeah,
Magneto being a completely different character in this movie, Professor X being a completely different character in this movie, just such a dick, which is such a on paper, such a classic Professor X story, to like be manipulative and ethically gray and,
right,
you know, all these different things. To just have it thrown in there, just out of, like, literally one scene, is, you know, same old Professor X. The very next scene, all of that gets dumped on you, and it's not interesting. It's all exposition. None of it is driven by the story. It's just, so what's going on with her? Well, here's all the horrible things I've been doing. And then, and also, I'm going to be mad at Hugh Jackman now, which makes no sense. Those types of things is kind of what tanks this movie. But
yeah,
like you said, the ideas were there. The actual plot of the movie, the actual story of the movie, I really enjoy. You know, just, you know, obviously, I wish Dark Phoenix had its own trilogy. And I wish that The Cure had its own movie. But the pieces they've set up to get to those points in this movie, I actually really enjoy on paper. It's just executed really poorly. And it's just draped in these characters that we care about and also aren't the same characters, which if you're going to change character to character, that's one thing. To do it with characters that we've spent two movies actually getting to know and caring about, like we care about Wolverine, we care about Professor X, we care about Magneto, we care about Storm. They're all completely different in this.
Totally different. Wolverine too. Like these written the same.
You know, and a lot of it can be written off as like, oh, these are dumb kids, or oh, these are, you know, he's been teaching for a little while. Like it's just not done well, right?
It's so poorly.
And when it comes to the cast, when it comes to the incredibly large number of mutants that are just thrown into this movie, just chucked in here, I think this is a very big example of one step back, two step forward. I don't think we knew. Obviously, they didn't know they were going to make 10 more X-Men movies. You know what I mean? Because they thought, end of a trilogy, let's dump it. Let's just everything we got. Why not? Throw it all out there. Hopefully something sticks. And it's unfortunate. But also, like, you can't really blame the studio for, like, very well could be our last shot at this. Let's get multiple Man and Juggernaut and everybody in this movie, right? And it's unfortunately just it doesn't do anything productive. And but I will stand by very hard that the most fun X-Men movie and the action stays. I'm a fan of it. I enjoy the action sequences. So for comic book movies being what comic book movies are, this is a bad one. There's no doubt about that. But I would love to. Did we do the we drafted like the bottom 25% of MCU movies, like on Rotten Tomatoes?
Was I there? I don't remember.
It was forever ago. But what we did was we took the bottom 25% on Rotten Tomatoes, and that was our pool, and we drafted from that. Would love to do that with comic book movies as a whole, like just 2000. Like comic book movies from the year 2000 on. We take the bottom. We take like the bottom 25, and that's our pool to draft from.
Right. That'd be fun.
That would be very fun because this could be a pretty high draft pick.
Maybe. Yeah.
It'll be interesting. So yeah, let's keep going. Let's move forward. Let's talk to our boy, Michael Keaton. Let's talk about spoilers.
Now you want to get nuts. Come on. Let's get nuts.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're here. Biggest winners and losers, David Thompson. What worked for you in this movie? What was the best element? What is your biggest winner from X-Men The Last Stand?
So I've got two characters, if I can do two. And it's going to be Storm and it's going to be Beast. I liked the use of both these characters in this movie. First off, our first time with Beast, we'd gotten Hank McCoy very briefly in, I think, X2. I don't even remember he's even mentioned in X1.
He's in a news clipping in X2.
Yeah, exactly. And this one, he's full on Beast. It's Kelsey Grammer, and he is awesome as Beast. He is like the linchpin of the movie. He is the connection to the X-Men from the government, and has a very, very big part of this film with the Cure. And I think it is done actually very well. And then for Storm, the reason she's a winner, not because she's like this amazing character, it's because she's actually given something in this movie. Like, it's like, that was the one thing that wasn't upsetting and it wasn't a disappointment. It's like, oh, wow, finally. Finally, we get something from Storm because in the first two, she's giving absolutely nothing. And this one, leadership role, which I enjoyed.
Little backstory there. Halle Berry was not going to do this movie unless Storm was given something to do. That was her prerequisite. Obviously, her star grew throughout these movies.
Yeah.
Her prerequisite to coming back for the third one was, I better have something to do because these first two, I've been given nothing to do.
I say good for her. Maybe she should have just stayed out.
Good for her. Yeah, man. I don't like Storm in this movie, but only because there's no build up to that. Like,
right.
It's in. Oh, man.
Oh, I know, no build up at all.
I know we don't like Rogue, but I have to point out one of the craziest lines in this whole movie. Rogue, without the Captain Marvel powers, easily the most bummer mutant ability in this entire franchise. Right. It yeah. sucks. There's not a ton you can do as Rogue. Mm-hmm. Right. And yep. your use in the field is very specific. So it makes you even less interesting. Right. And when Rogue, the person who out of everybody here would probably need or want the cure more than anybody else, looks at the gorgeous, magnificent, powerful, weather wielding Aurora Monroe and says, you know, I think I want the cure, you know, to kind of just kind of fix this problem I'm having. And Halle Berry looks at her and says, hey, you don't have a problem. We're perfect. We're fine. We're great just how we are. She has no right to talk.
Nope.
You know what I mean?
She does like, not.
She has the coolest power. Yeah. She looks the way she does. And she gets to, like, you know, be an essential part of this team. Rogue.
So true.
Who are you to speak on that, Halle Berry? Yeah. You don't know.
If Wolverine had said it, maybe. Well, you know.
Beast would have been the perfect. Like, that's in the comics.
That's a great point.
Beast is the cure guy in the comics, and we'll see that in future movies. But like, Halle Berry is not the person who should be like, no, hey, you and I, Rogue, we're fine.
Right.
We're doing great.
That was just them trying to give her more of that, those leadership moments, like character moments. And yeah, you're totally so right.
Silly.
Yeah, so, that's a great point.
And then Professor X dies, and everybody in the room, all right, shut down the school. It's done. It's over.
Hey, right.
It's over. Pack it up. And then Angel walks in off the street. Hey, you know, can I stay here with you guys? Halle Berry's like, you know what? You can. Fuck everybody else here. We're going to keep the school open. It's so silly. Gosh. It's so silly.
Yeah, the bad now, movie.
Back to Beast really quick. How great is Kelsey Grammer?
Oh, and so good.
So good, right? He's the best part of this movie by far. I'm excited to have him back. You know, like, people forget he is back as Beast. He looks more comic accurate, but he still kind of looks like this. The practical effects on Beast here are incredible, right?
Yeah, like, looks
they look amazing. And the what they do with him, Beast, for whatever reason, works with the wire work stuff that they do here. It looks a little weird on Wolverine. It works with Beast for some reason, I think. And to have Kelsey Grammer back in this role for what we assume will be Secret Wars, I think will be a really exciting thing, and I'm pumped to see more of him. And we're getting into the point here, David, where, like, Beast is really one of the first characters other than Cyclops and Jean where, like, we're going to get other versions of him moving forward. Like,
yeah.
We're going to get another Beast. And it's going to be Nicholas.
Yeah.
But, like, those three, along with Professor X and Magneto, obviously, but, like, that's the marketing of the movie. Those three are, like, kind of the holdovers from the original Fox series, because, like, it's Mystique, it's Quicksilver, it's all these different mutants that they use in the reboot. So it'll be interesting to see how we feel about how, you know, four movies of Nicholas Holt compared to one movie of Kelsey Grammer. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's an interesting one for me. My biggest winner, like I said earlier, is the story. I when you look at the story of all three of these movies, I think it's really cool. I think what they do with Logan in the first two, leading into him having to be this teacher, Storm stepping up to be that leadership role when Professor X dies, all these different things. You know, I think that the elements that they have on paper are very cool. But to move right into my biggest loser, it's a pairing. The way they execute them is so bad. It's just so bad, right?
Yeah.
And it's just unfortunate that, like, in, you know, we talked about it a little bit last week. There are so many things in these movies we wish we could have seen done in the MCU. It's just more of that here. And I think that a lot of the concepts of what they did here was really sick. And it's just unfortunate that they did it in such a dead, a dud kind of way. But, you know, it's one of those things where they tried and missed, and they tried way too much at the same time. But I think that this movie, I feel like, is a lesson for the comic book movie genre moving forward. Try not to do totally. Too much. And,
yeah.
and when we see movies nowadays do too much, it really does stick out a little more than maybe it would. I think this is a big reason why, because this is, like, in my opinion, you know, as somebody who I feel like I've seen every comic book movie since 1984, or at least every theatrical release comic book movie since 1984. This is one of the biggest examples of trying to do too much, and it just being a inherent detriment to the movie. You know what right. I mean? Like, every scene, them doing too much is getting in the way of itself. Like, even the powerful opening with the angel in the bathroom, like very reflective. Yeah, which is good. Very reflective of the Iceman moment last week when he was coming out to his parents. You know, right. little kid in the bathroom. 1 second, like, you know, it's very relatable.
I preferred this one so much more than that, though, by the way.
Yeah, I think they both hold different weights. Obviously, the Bobby one was more conversation, like, that was dialogue.
The Bobby one, I felt, was just too much of a plot point to get to the whole pyro thing. And, you know, I don't know. That's just like, me.
You know those mutants you see on the TV? I'm the most dangerous one. He's coming back in Deadpool Wolverine. Aaron Sample.
Oh, is he really?
Oh, yeah, he's in the trailer.
Oh, my gosh, that's right. Now I realize who that is.
Yeah.
Oh, my mind's blown.
Yeah.
I hate him in these movies.
He's cool. Dude, he's got the little torch now.
Right. That I liked that. That was a very good subtle touch from X2 to X3 where it's like, nice. Because he can't make it, but he can control it.
Boom. Pretty dope.
That's spidey webs right there.
Yeah. I forget what I was saying. But, yeah, man, I think that... This movie is, I think it's just a prime example of doing too much at the same time. And it gets in the way of itself. It's unfortunate. But there are things to look at, I think, that are cool. Your biggest loser.
I mean, it's simple. It's the Dark Phoenix storyline. It's Jean Grey coming back from the dead. It's the horrible utilization of her. It's the fact that, and it's my only, I don't want to go too long because, I mean, I'm sure you could dive in so much more detail on this whole thing. It's the fact that she does nothing. Like, there's a couple of moments, you know, we get a couple of moments where it's like we get the explanation of how it is a second part of her head. We get the backstory of how it's been suppressed and she's been kept out, locked out from Professor X. But here's my biggest issue with all of it is by the end of the movie, the last half of the movie, she just stands there. I mean, she's just doing nothing. It's like comical how why bring her back, why use this iconic storyline for her to do nothing at the end of the day? Like, I feel like she was just completely useless too. It like didn't even, if she was such like the weapon, you know, like the side, like MacGuffin. I hated it. I hated the execution of it. Like, and that goes with the fact too, another thing where it's the discrepancy between the first two and this one. Now we've got this like ranking system, level 5 mutant or whatever, that class 5. Hate that shit.
Cool idea.
Metachlorian ass nonsense. I'm like, come on. In the third movie, you pick this up from day. It should have been a part of his opening soliloquy in X1. And then I would have cared and I would have thought it was really cool. But just randomly bringing up the class levels in this one, I hate it. And it was supposed to give stakes. It was supposed to show us how powerful she is. It did not work for me.
It's one of those things where, like, had they had set it up, like, it goes back to, like, I think it's a really cool idea to have classes, because that is so something the government would do, would be to, like, class rank these mutants. You know what I mean?
It doesn't seem like the government. It seems like a
that's the problem.
X thing. Yeah.
It's the mutant that can read other mutants' powers. Cool.
Right.
He's also got super speed, but the one that can read other people's powers. She has this number system that Professor X is for some reason aware of. And like, what is this uniform system?
For some reason, we kind of know how he could be aware of it, I guess.
Sure, but like, why is this random mutant that puts a number to different mutants? Why is that the key?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things. Cool idea if it was the government ranking them, which would make so much sense. Bad idea when it's just some random mutant. And shout out the kind of funny interview. They point out this moment that I don't think I realized when I was younger. I remember as a kid when Magneto bust into that meeting where the guy's giving a good speech. He's like, hey, listen, they're not forcing it on us. I know we don't want this cure, but we need to mobilize. We need to get organized. He's trying to put together a stance against it, like a group, like he's trying to be civil about it. Right.
Yeah.
And when I was a kid, I thought Magneto like burst through the doors and like made a big entrance and like outspeeched that guy like in Dune 2. No, he is literally just sitting in the back. He's just chilling with a cape on. I mean, come on. What are we doing here? Yeah, man. lame. And the Jean Grey stuff, it's bad. They made so many changes from the comic, which I'm not saying is a bad thing, but for them to be bad changes, that sucks. And it's just one of those, yeah. Like I said, like the Phoenix story needs to be a trilogy. They do better in the next attempt at it, setting it up.
Mm-hmm.
The final's still not very good, but they at least set it up a little bit better in the next reboot series.
It's shocking they do it again after watching this and like kind of going through the full history. It's crazy they do the same. They try to do it again.
Well, and you know, we'll get into it as we
watch. Yeah, we will. Movies, we will.
In my opinion, up to Dark Phoenix, I think they had done a good job table setting. It's just they dropped the ball again. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You can blame Captain Marvel for that in a lot of ways. We'll talk about that here in a few weeks. But no, but the simple fact that we never get Phoenix, you know what I mean? Like we get Dark Phoenix right away. We never get Phoenix.
Nope.
And that sucks. Like that's a bummer part of all of this. And yeah, man, it's really bad. Top plays. You said Beast. Beast was my top play. Just him
being. When he fights.
Yeah, it's cool. It's very cool. It's just awesome.
I had a few not top plays.
Hit me.
Da-na-na.
I enjoyed that quite a bit.
The first one is Wolverine slicing the guy's arms off and then growing back, and they're these rubbery CGI, looks like they're not finished, that was not finished in post moment.
Why not just have his actual arms once they grow back?
Don't know.
Why can't you cut his actual arms back in?
I do not know why they they computer cut them, removed them, and then added fake ones. That was hysterical. Because that
weird.
Another not top play would be also the setup for the final battle, moving the Golden Gate Bridge. The fact that you know, I'm sure you did. The time jump, it's 3 PM, and then it's suddenly 10 PM. Like what? Same thing at the end. Is sticking to this not top plays. Juggernaut chasing Kitty Pryde. Hated everything about that. And correct me if I'm wrong. Like, okay, I guess it didn't make sense because I'm trying to think of the kid that like the cure kid with the powers like and everything. I guess it did work in the end. Like they did like stop Juggernaut because of it.
Yeah, because they were off to the side and he dung.
Right. Yeah. So that final battle. Is just like there's so many. See, the main thing, not to just keep pointing out not top plays, but the last thing with Magneto, why, like his, I feel like in the later movies, and we will get there. I'm so excited to get to Fassbender's version. I feel like we get more of the like OP Magneto abilities where it's like, yeah, he is this powerful. Because in this, it's like he should be kind of wrecking shop. And there's also Jean Grey just standing there, like. Like, why is Wolverine doing anything? You know, like I feel like Magneto is completely. Oh my gosh! Then once again, it's not to be negative. The whole pawn thing. There's the pawns. Why did they go first? Because they're the pawn. This is it twice. They're the pawns. I'm like, oh my gosh, who wrote this movie?
You see, they play chess, David.
Oh,
in the other movies, they were playing chess.
About. I did really like at the very end when he's playing chess by himself. And he moves the piece slightly. I really enjoyed that.
No. Yeah.
Worth it? No. But I like that one moment.
It negates the entire movie. But yeah, it's a cool scene. Exactly. I agree. Yeah, that's what they should have done. Whatever that is. Yeah, man.
Yeah, I gave him the vaccine at the beginning and then worked the way back.
Worked your way backwards, yeah. He was right, though. They already put it in a gun.
Yeah.
The worst part about Magneto's power level is that he does move the Golden Gate Bridge over to Alcatraz Island, which I'm in San Francisco right now. That's insane.
It is insane.
Same thing. And then he just stops doing shit.
It's like, but he's not acting tired. It's not like a Pokemon.
Yeah, it's like strategy
thing. No, it's just like we want to, as writers and as the people making the movie, like focus on other characters.
Yeah.
And
we need to show off other things. That's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, you know, hate to be Monday morning quarterback, but like drop a Golden Gate Bridge on the building.
do something. Take one. There's a bunch of metal around, if I'm not mistaken. Like, this is not one of those.
The whole building is made of metal.
It's not like the plastic gun situation. Like, that made sense. That was smart.
Take the bridge 50 yards further and just drop it on the whole building.
Right.
Done.
You cannot tell me Magneto, if he was truly locked in, couldn't have gotten to that kid. You know,
would have just crushed the building around him.
Just exactly. Like, he's so powerful. Taking a car and just start throwing them at it. Crazy.
And I hate to ride the MCU as much as I do on this podcast, but like, that they do a good job of, like,
always.
They take people off the board.
Taking them out.
Something like that.
Yes.
Ultron, Thor, you're bugging me. And then it's, you know, takes them off the field.
You always see in the MCU, for the most part, when it's a group of characters, how certain heroes are being taken off, distracted, not there, not being able to be there in time. And I think it also speaks to the abilities of mutants, like, in these moments where it's like, it's kind of hard to get a grasp of, especially with Jean Grey in this one and kind of Magneto, where it's like, we just don't even know how it works and we don't understand how powerful it is.
Yeah. Man, when Wolverine's coming up and the rib cage, the adamantium rib cage.
I loved that. Like, that looked really cool. I thought
so dope, dude.
Like, that looked excellent. Compared the fact that 5 minutes before we get the rubbery arms guy, and then we get that. I thought that looked
pretty amazing,
great. And it was, and you saw like you said, his rib cage, like his chest. Mm-hmm. I thought that was actually, they put all the budget there, clearly.
And it's the one good Jean Grey moment is when she switches and like, kill me. You know what I mean? Like the second time in this movie she says kill me.
Also hated the, by the way, just quick shout out, I hate how Logan is in love with her in this trilogy. It's terrible the entire time. It's the worst romance story I've like ever seen. It's the most underdeveloped romance I've ever seen in a comic book trilogy, for sure.
Peter and MJ, but
underdeveloped though. Like, I mean, they barely get any screen time together. In the first movie, hey, what's up?
Yeah.
I really like you. It's bad. And then the rest of the movies, we're supposed to think that like he has any kind of entitlement to her. Like in X2, he's like, she picked you, man. No shit, she picked me. Like, it's the worst. It's not because it's chemistry this, chemistry that. They barely even touch it. Like, it's just supposed to be this like understood thing.
It's assumed.
Assumed. Yeah.
It's a bummer. It makes Cyclops suck. It makes Wolverine suck. And unfortunately, Jean Grey is just never given anything fun to say.
Yeah. A top play is kind of James Marsden just not being in this movie. It's like, all right. I mean, a complete, unbelievable just travesty to the character in this trilogy. But then the third one, they just get rid of him. Obviously, for the reasons we talked about earlier. But it's kind of funny.
That movie, ladies and gentlemen, that is X-Men The Last Stand. David Thompson, we've watched the original trilogy for the Foxman series, X-Men 2000, X2, and X-Men The Last Stand. Let's rank this motherfucker. I think we start bottom up, right?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so my three is going to be Last Stand. You?
Yeah, I'd say Last Stand, even though I do think it's more fun than my number two.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. It does. It's one of those interesting things where I think it is definitively last, but rare. Even in the MCU, you don't see this. It does do things better than the other two movies.
Definitely. Some parts look much better. Some of the action is much better in this one. I shit on a lot of the action. Yeah, like there's
coordination of it.
Yeah, like the choreography in general, I think is better. Those are some really bad moments, but like the first one is just it looks bad. The first one just looks bad to me.
Yeah. Plus Kitty Pryde. I mean, come on. How do you not love Kitty Pryde?
I really like Kitty Pryde in this movie, actually. She's my favorite of the young ones in this movie.
Sure. What do you think of the suits? The all-black suits, which are still a bummer in retrospect. Mm-hmm. But also, we have to remember this was like prime Joss Whedon X-Men era where they were wearing those types of suits in the comics. Right. But Iceman had the blue stripe and Kitty had the pink and Logan had the yellow. Storm had the white. Pretty fucking cool. Pretty cool.
My other side of the coin, I liked how Magneto looked in this movie a lot.
Yeah.
He looked I feel like that was more comic accurate and just kind of like very serious. And he's in his like helmet costume for a lot of this one.
That scene in Jean's house is just silly.
Oh my gosh.
Hard to watch, man. I mean, emotional moment when Charles dies and smiles at Logan and all this stuff, but
it sucks though. Totally don't sucks.
Don't be a dick.
It's that and easy. then Magneto. Oh gosh, Magneto's like turned. Anyway,
it's like he didn't know that was gonna happen. Oh no, wait.
Yeah.
No, not him.
Yeah.
All right. So X-Men: Last Stand, bottom of the ranking. It'll be interesting to see if it gets dethroned at the bottom of this list.
Mm-hmm.
That's gonna be something to look out for. Now comes the interesting part. 2-1. What are you going at number 2?
I'm going with X-Men 1, 2020, or 2000. I think it's a worse movie than X2. So X2 would be my number 1. I think X2 has a much better overall story, I would say. It looks better. It feels a little bit more advanced. And in general, I do still like the characters in that, even though I do like in X1 how Magneto is the main villain. But I think Stryker is really strong. We talked about that last week. I think Stryker is a really strong villain. So yeah, I'm going to go with X2. Even though X2 disappointed me, like we talked about last week, it still take my top spot right now.
I'm in the same boat. So both of us, it goes X2, X-Men, X-Men Last Stand. But I want to point out, like, X2 and X-Men, way more of a coin flip than I ever could have imagined.
Yeah, like, I'm with
like,
you.
It is very close. Like, I do love the, like, you know, the team, like the fact that X-Men was the first one. Like, there are so many scenes in the first X-Men that are just like iconic scenes. Rogue and her boyfriend, iconic scene. Logan at the bar, iconic scene.
Yeah, the intro to Logan's awesome.
Intro to Logan. Yeah. The school and just like, mm-hmm. The first time he's introduced to all of it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just like iconic scene, meeting Professor X. Professor X and Magneto in the first one is the best Professor
so
X.
So good.
And yeah. So yeah, I think just there's a quality jump in X2 that just nudges it out, but I am on coin flip between those two, I think.
I like the one thing X2 puts me over the top as well is the more complex I would say dynamics in the conflict of the story with Stryker, sure. Where where Magneto becomes this wild card. And I really enjoy that moment. And I think Mystique is super strong in that movie, who I very much so missed in this one. I thought Mystique was very, very well done in X2. Her powers were done really well. And I was like, just fascinated by her story, her character. Like, she was throwing me off. She was hitting me with those awesome twists that she's so capable of doing. So yeah, and I really didn't like Rogue in X1, and she's a little bit, she's not as much in X2.
Sure. On the X2 thing, I think another thing that puts her over the top is the Spider-Man thing, where the villain and the hero, that being Stryker and Logan, they do have a conflict. There is a relationship there, and that's what makes every Spider-Man story.
The hand on the ice or whatever. That part's weird in X2.
Is Hugh Jackman good in these movies? We'll find out, ladies and gentlemen, next week. We watch Wolverine Origins.
Never seen it. One
of the most iconic comic book movies ever made.
I'm actually really excited. I wasn't excited for this one. I'm really excited to watch this one.
Yeah, it's this is one of those movies where I'm very positive. I like put to the test. If you ask me random day, randomly on the street to write down the sequence of events that happen in Wolverine Origins, I could do it any day.
So is this the one where the continuity gets thrown out the window?
Don't remember.
Okay. Because there's continuity in these three movies. I do want to point out, like, there is continuity in these three movies. I think after this, I don't know where it goes because I only know, like, when the reboot happens.
They start playing with it. I mean, Days of Future Past is going to happen. So, like, you know, we'll...
Which I cannot wait for. I love that movie.
So, very good. But Wolverine Origins, it's one of those, like, this might be the one I've seen the most, which is wild.
Really?
But, yeah. Wow. I mean, I was in, like, sixth grade when it came out. You know what I mean? Like, this is it's way more cartoonish than these first three. So, like, I was primed for this. I was ready for this one. It's interesting. It's what do you like Black Eyed Peas?
Yeah, sure.
Ladies and gentlemen, tune in next week. Wolverine Origins.
What a tease.
It's gonna be a good time. Until then, we'll see you next time.